Chapter 3, NASA and the King. Yara had been watching intently at the human process and how Rex had started trying to use his newfound power. "You must be given plenty of freedom," ordered Yara, taking into account all that was happening around him. "But keep a record on his levels of pride as well as his luxury levels. We cannot waste time processing his behaviours like I have done in the past," Yara spoke with a grin. "Yes, Your Majesty, it will be done as you ordered. I will personally let Rex know the surety of your will and your desires," Rabishak voiced, as he bowed in obedience to the king, knowing full well that Yara was on his way to Earth, again disguised as a charitable worker. His passion for the humble people of Earth had become a regular obsession for many thousands of years now. "I know you will be, faithful old friend. Tell my council I'm off to the Andromeda Galaxy for a season or two. I must visit Eloy for a moment. So I'll leave you in control of this unique situation, Rabishak, because I know you will create a rewarding outcome," smiled the king in reply. All the king courtiers were in audience waiting with bated breath. Then Yara disappeared. At NASA, Rex had teleported himself on the other side of the security gate and spoke to the guard. "Hello, could you direct me to the leader's command center, young man?" He addressed the gate officer in charge. "Who are you? And how'd you get in here?" said the guard, roughly, and ordered him to wait here. The guard moved his hand toward his AK-47 Masada, then, as if having an instant change of mind, moved his hand to his phone and proceeded to call for an escort to meet him at the gate. Rex was no fool, for he knew how true of a hacky these guards can be, so he froze and waited. This gave Rex time to concentrate on the antimatter subparticles and to begin his teleport process, so that in a second he could bring it into play when the escort car arrived to take Rex to the holding room. Rex asked, "Are we going over there?" pointing to the direction of a very tall and sleek building the car appeared from. "Yep, buddy, we're going for a ride. You're my guest, huh?" scoffed the chubby young guard, smirking wryly. At that moment, Rex ordered the quarks to enter the mirror universe and exit a second later at the vacant car space where the escort car had come from. "What the hell just happened?" blurted the guard in amazement. Falling to his knees, he looked up in bewilderingly into Rex's eyes and said, "Who are you?" Rex couldn't help it. He replied in a forceful, strange voice, "Take me to your leaders now." As if realizing how abruptly he spoke, mellowed his tone down a notch and continued, "Or else just point the way and I'll teleport there myself." In a humble type of childish manner, the nervous guard pointed to the high-rise office building on the left. "Up to the top floor," he squawked with a muffled voice, all the while holding his hand in front of his face as if Rex was going to eat him or something. Unable to stop his trembling and in total amazement, mumbled in a low tone and with his voice still quivering uncontrollably, continued, And before he could finish his sentence, whoosh, Rex was gone. And like a flash, Rex suddenly appeared inside the office boardroom, gazing into the faces of five men staring at him in utter shock as if he were a ghost. "I know," Rex blurted out with a laugh. "Where'd I come from? How'd I get here?" You could hear a pin drop. Suddenly, the stark silence was broken. Across the room was a huge commotion at the doorway entrance. This now demanded the center of attention of everyone in the room. There, with his clothes ruffled and shirt half hanging out, looking like something you wouldn't believe, was a very nervous, flustered guard, the very guard who had only just moments before given Rex directions. He had evidently scurried up the stairwell and finally found his way to the dull, double-timbered carved doors on the meeting room, gasping and totally out of breath, trembling and uncontrollable. He was in total shock and looked in amazement at Rex standing there. He couldn't help mumbling things like, "How, what the, you?" Rex unperturbed, looked at him and chuckled. White, with one sugar, please. He glanced at Rex, then at the five heads of staff, and in unison they beckoned him to bring refreshments all around. Yes, sir, he quickly replied, saluting more than once, whilst exiting backwards and left. This created an air of continuity between all of them in the room, and not letting the turmoil that just now happened deter them from the event of Rex suddenly appearing, they were still bewildered to what this encounter might bring. The commander-in-chief spoke. Are you human? Rex grabbed his crutch and said with a shy relief, sure am, just like you, with one difference. He purposely did not mention the metabolic change the Watchers had made to him. He was sure they'd use that as a form of weaponry to be manipulated. 100% human, born in a small country town in Australia. Ha! The CEO laughed. So you're an Aussie, mate. Well, pleased to meet you. You know, we have to discuss your apparent teleporting into this room, mate. CNO stammered. I will show you the reality of such an event. Where's your car? It wouldn't be that one down in the VIP car parking space, would it be? Smiled Rex. Well, yes, it is. Why do you ask? Do we have to drive somewhere? The CEO replied with a puzzled look. Here are the beverages, sir. Staff Sergeant whisked the serving tray into the conference room. Will that be all, sir? He saluted with a look of expectancy. Yes, Sergeant, that'll be all. Stay posted at the door, please, the CEO retorted. Tell me, sir, do you have the coordinates of the ISS and the place in space where it is right now? Rex queried. CEO tapped on a few keys on the board in front of him, and up on the big screen came the ISS with four camera locations, revealing everything around it. Of course we do. It's our baby, the CEO grinned. And before the words were out of his mouth, Rex had ordered the antimatter quarks to move in and out of the fifth dimension to the ISS coordinates. Suddenly, alarm sounded. Red alert. NASA went into lockdown mode, and an image on the screen on one of the cameras revealed a red sports car less than 100 metres from the ISS. What the hell? That's my Triumph. The number plates were clearly visible as the camera zoomed in. The CEA looked steadfast at the vacant car space, then at Rex and said, okay, now we need to talk seriously about this technology you're using. My name's Simon Warner. I head the NASA space program. And your name is? Hi, Simon. My name is Rex Zerubbabel. But you can call me Rex. Pleased to meet you, said Rex as he extended his hand in greeting. My car, Mr. Zerubbabel, Simon requested, not taking any notice of the extended hand greeting. This affront did not perturb Rex one bit. Simon, said Rex, I only do one free teleport. So let's discuss the terms of my power to be used in your program. I prefer to be called Rex, as Zerubbabel means SOB. No, Rex continued quickly. He could read what Simon was thinking by the look on his face. No, not son of a bitch. Cedar Babylon. I do not use my Jewish heritage. Okay, Rex, whatever you wish, Simon said. Then Simon commanded the red alert to cease and called in a band of other officers. He debriefed them of the situation. Rex had brought his bank account details with him and proceeded to make his request known to Simon. Needless to say, in the meantime, Rex's cup had been taken away for DNA mapping and fingerprint analysis. As the officials assembled around the plush conference decks, Rex motioned with his hand for silence. Immediately, silence gripped the room. First, he said, I want this to be as secret as possible. I know the cat will be out of the bag soon enough, but meanwhile, let's not stir up other countries. Do we agree? The room motioned with a yes and so forth. And I want 80% of the cost of all expenses you would spend sending stuff out there. Stuff? One of the fatter officials blurted out. Yeah, stuff. Anything you wish. It will be assessed and then paid into my account the day before the teleporting. Don't ask for a massive station. You can't afford it, Rex grinned. I'm thinking of going with a traditional handshake agreement. With the proviso that if you screw me, I'll put every piece of space equipment you have in space out there. Waving his hand beyond and the sights of them all on the desert, way out there. What do you say, gentlemen? Rex stared out into the desert. He knew that for a fact he could not beat their legal system or outsmart their capital minds. So he went with a time-honoured tradition that worked for thousands of years, the barter system and a handshake. Rex knew he had the upper hand, and like the old pawnbroker he was for many years, that suited him just fine. Sure, why not, mate? Said Simon with a little chuckle. Oh, by the way, Rex said, I want to be the first to barter for the first teleport. I want a solid concrete and a stainless steel space base built right out there for me, with walls 2 feet thick and armoured triple glazed windows with blast shields. Show me your designs when you call me back for the first teleport. And I want the first building to be done within a month, he ordered. The other four can be done later. I want them all to be concrete and make each one the size of a football field. I like my space. Besides, I plan on putting it on the moon. Oh, by the way, could you guys do a diagnostics of where to place it? On the cusp, I thought. I do want to work with you if I can. If you can't afford me, I will go to the Chinese, Rex commanded. With that, he bid them farewell, saying with a blunt, call me. Rex knew they would have all his details soon enough. Then he vanished out of their sight. Needless to say, NASA was abuzz. Simon immediately called his good friend Osama and gave him a full report. The DNA testing of his saliva and fingerprints came in as a priority one. Then he requested Osama the funding to use this power to further their space program. He also sent for the best people in the world who knew about this sort of phenomena. The first report on their mystery guest was brief, but to the point. Rebel, criminal, dysfunctional were the main words that stood out. Oh my God, Simon laughed. This guy couldn't even run his pawnbroking business straight. 3 years jail for a string of offences relating to his dubious business practices. Attach me to the Australian Prime Minister and to the head of ASIO. We need more information on this character, but discreetly. Use the cover he hacked into one of our NASA computers, trying to, I don't know, you think of something. But don't make them suspect. I want all the data on him in 1 hour. Simon barked. Bob, who was that Russian genetic scientist that came here last month and talked of such bizarre events, remember? He worked freelance for us one time on the Mars missions. Simon asked his 2IC, Bob. Oh, yeah, I remember. Yes, we had drinks later on that night. He was a brilliant man, said Bob, thinking deeply, tapping his fingers intently on the edge of the table. Victor! Victor, yes, that was his name. He had no family ties and he was totally dedicated to his work. Indeed, we could use him here, Simon. If this power is biological or has some element of biology in use, he would be the one man I know that could be brought into this, Bob resounded excitingly. Ah, yes, echoed Simon. Send for him right now, Bob. Tell him the nature of the security. Use some type of cover, though. I'll find out if he leaks it out. We need to make sure they don't blab. Yes, sir. The guard, who at this time had calmed right down, addressed Simon. The team you called together are assembled in the secure conference room. Simon shut the door to the conference room and the security guard was posted outside to keep watch. The teams of NASA's top 10, seated comfortably around a massive table, were looking intently at each other as they began questioning Simon. How did your triumph get up there, Simon? Asked one. Is there a mission we don't know about? Asked another. Simon interrupted the string of questions, beckoning all to be quiet. I will tell you everything, and as usual, you know, it doesn't pass this room, Simon instilled in them the rule of thumb of secrecy. The monitor appeared from behind a curtain, and there, seated comfortably on his elbows on the table, cuffing his chin, was Osama. As per usual, befitting a high-ranking president, he was shadowed by two of his most trusted men standing neatly behind him, one on either side, looking quite intently at the busy surroundings. "Yes, Simon, fill us in." Osama smiled intently. A silent hush fell over the room. "We have a teleporter." A rumbling noise broke out again as everyone started talking over one another. Simon beckoned all to be quiet. An inquiring hush fell over the room once again. "No, it's not a machine. It's a human. I don't know yet, but I tell you, be assured, he has teleported 3 times at his own will, in my presence alone, and once with the guard posted at the door." "Impossible," quicked the voice at the top of the table. "As impossible as it may seem, it's a fact, and facts don't lie," Simon yelled back, starting to feel a bit frustrated, but continued talking. "He's a dubious character at best. You'll all receive a full report by day's end," he continued, as he made a simple request. "He wants 8% of the cost of all our missions paid as a barter into a fund to finance a moon base and all equipment." The laughing was sporadic, getting louder. "What, doesn't have a company?" mocked one of the generals, who was being flashed onto Osama's screen. "Sir, he wants to do this by trust and a handshake," Simon directly answered to the present.
"Well, why not, Simon? He sounds like an honest man. I would like to meet him soon, if you can arrange the time," Osama smiled.
"Mr. President, sir, you will have his brief within the hour. You may not want to make a politician of him, I dare say," Simon blushed.
"Do say, Simon," interrupted the president.
"Oh, I have just received your preliminary right now." "Criminal? What? Oh, I see. Yes, we will have to consider this a little further, Simon." "By all means, continue, my friend," encouraged Osama. "He said he will be back once we have finalized the first moon base and have our first project to teleport," Simon spoke softly.
"Why not teleport a base there ourselves?" one official asked, because he made it very specific, our cost. "We couldn't afford a slab of concrete to the moon."
"He has us by the short and curlies on this one. Besides, he made it quite clear he will go private or to the Chinese," Simon quickly replied.
"Chinese? Never. Not while I'm in power."
"That will not happen," Osama commanded with authority. "Do what he wants. Start the moon base project. You have my personal word on it. And a report to me personally, Simon. We need this. We started this race. By God, we'll finish it. Till the end. And besides, in all that, he's an Australian, a fellow brother of the human struggle. He'll play ball. Have a little faith, boys. Let's see this through together. I would love to meet him. Set up a time with my secretary. Maybe he could teleport into my office. That would be a hoot. We have all done some dubious things in the past, gentlemen. Let's forget the past and look to the future," Osama replied with a speech fit for a candidate for the Nobel Forgiveness Prize, if ever there was one. The tension in the room slowly eased. "Yes, sir," Simon saluted, standing at attention, feeling very pleased with himself. And with that, Osama monitored off. "Well, gentlemen, you heard our commander-in-chief," Simon chirped confidently. "Let's make this happen. I want the plans for the first moon base on my desk by morning. Get all available personnel working on it pronto." Then, tapping his cheek, he continued, "We'll call it a future mining project for the moon." Simon then nodded approvingly as he left the room. For the first time, the room was moving in a flow of harmony, in wonder of such a person. "Sergeant, you have just been promoted to my private guard. I will brief you in my office. Come," Simon said, as a still bewildering guard. "Yes, sir," the guard replied, following closely behind Simon. By day's end, a toy triumph had its unveiling in the local news, as a prank led by 2 NASA employees that were duly dismissed and sent to another level on NASA as punishment for carrying out such an elaborate prank. Needless to say, the two key IT personnel were quickly designated to a secure floor to work on the teleport project and to keep people away from any sensitive material. UR got his first report from Rabashack, and as UR envisioned, it was going as planned. UR was on the streets of the Philippines, posing as a Red Cross worker, covered in sweat and soiled clothes, when suddenly his tent was mystified with the presence of Matt Rabashack. "And how are you holding up, Your Majesty?" he inquired. Standing tall and at attention, Rabashack shrugged his shoulders with concern. It was the only time he could actually touch the king. It was also required for a gesture of appearance's sake. But Rabashack loved to feel the unseen power that emanated from his lord and king. He liked his quirky nature as much as the king loved this giving process. "Yeah, I'm fine, old friend. I have 3 more hours of pulling down a broken home with some other guys before I finish. I'll see you at sunset at the usual place, okay?" Yuar glowed with a sense of purpose. "Besides, the young man I took this body from has a date tonight with 2 gorgeous women. It seems he really knew how to live. Too bad he was going to die this week. Still, I can't let such a love feast go to waste, can I, Rabashack? Like I have said before, I admired quite a few of the ancient kings this world has minted, Solomon being my favourite. Imagine making a bathhouse with 1,000 baths. He had a great elevated seat above them, and in the evening he always chose 3 to sleep with that night. It seems that they were the fall of him also. Oh well. But of course he had other royal qualities, as did many of the kings of that era. Today they are far too corrupt. Oh yes, Natus, my rebellious brother. Send him to me soon. I want to be back here by dinner time tonight. I promised to take them both to a classic restaurant at 7:30, and I want to be there. Your will is my command, my lord and king. I will see you tomorrow, and don't work too hard, he quipped. Sometimes, Rabashack, you're like my mother. Now go. I've got work to do. Yuar arose with a face of ardent focus. 4 o'clock came, and Yuar said goodbye to his fellow workmates. Then as he turned the corner, he teleported to the Egyptian mountain, where Rabashack was waiting with Natus. Rabashack left the brothers together as he waited over by a rocky path, still with his eyes fixed on them, but ever suspicious of Natus' intent. "Natus, we haven't finished that chess game yet. Your last move was 400 Earth years ago," Yuar said, greeting him with a smile. "Is this why you've asked me for my presence? To make a move? Is your life that mundane? What is that? A cut I see in your fleshly body? What have you been doing? You're not fit to rule this world. You know it. Besides, I don't think you will pay up if I win," Natus snapped back. "Brother, I would not lie to you. The wager is the same. You will have free reign of this world for 1,000 years. Nothing has changed, even though you make every attempt to assert my power and rule." "I still love you as my brother," Yuar smiled. "Enough of this babble. What do you want?" "Okay, make your move then. To recap, I move my knight to e5 and your bishop or knight is about to breathe their last breath. It was during a time like this, the Crusades were on, and you put too much hope in your pathetic mortals." "So move," Natus laughed. "The game is important, but my move is this. I want to give you 3 years of rule here, to see you in action right now. I will allow you to have one mortal with power to consolidate your rulership. I'll give you 3 choices of power. 1, teleport. 2, fire. 3, instant death, the off switch. Choose now." Yuar stared at him intently. Neither moved a muscle. "There's a catch. Now what are you playing?"
Okay, I'll play. Teleport. No way. They would discover all the world you run. My reign would cease. The off switch. No, I can do that myself. I'll take the firepower. It will establish my mortal as a god. They are too superstitious here. Natus smirked back with a wiry smile. Done. To keep the balance pure, I have given a mortal one of these powers also. Which one? Natus quickly snapped back at Yuan. That's my business. The balance is protected. Remember, if you break the rules, I will end this chess game and your rule here and now. I'm not a fool. I'll play by your rules, at least until I win. Well, it's your move, brother. King to 0-0. Take your time. We will meet again for your next move, brother. You are echoed in the distance as he sped off toward Ravishak, echoing, remember, touch not my people. And with that, you are teleported to his tent. Ravishak stayed with Natus, but he beckoned him to leave, and he did with pleasure. Natus pondered his next move and the move of Yuar. A king, one space, what a waste, he thought, concerning, cementing his opinion of his pompous brother. He also considered the prospect of a temporary rule. He swelled with power and convened his council. The meeting went well, your majesty, Ravishak echoed in the distance as they two departed. Very well, echoed Yuar. I will tell you, my trusted friend, I am giving Natus 3 years of rule here on this earth and the power of fire to one of his mortals. I know he comes to this world a lot and has acquired many admirers. If only they knew the real Natus. So you will alert the Watchers and Natus will have limited rule of this world from the mirror universe. And of course, using his puppet as his front man, you are ordered. Oh, your majesty, 3 years? I know you must preserve the balance at all costs, but the destruction he could do in 3 years could be irreversible, my liege. Is there no other way? Ravishak pleaded, hindering a personal hatred for the dark brother, linking him to a rogue ram. No, I have calculated all options and talked to a river of counselors. This is the only way to restore the balance. Besides, he thinks he will rule this world for the next 1,000 years. He will not destroy much. I know your heart, my friend. If he does win well 1,000 years, I will visit the earth with a super match. So let's project he doesn't win. You still have your best minds on the physical outcome of our chess game, right? Have no fear, Ravishak. I see a future of paradise with these mortals. Not one of a planet melted like a pizza. Oh, the Pizza Emporium. That's where I'll take these two gorgeous honeys. Keep me informed, Ravishak. I trust your judgment, friend. Yuar replied, then made his way into the camp showers, joining his fellow workers, laughing and fooling around and discussing their day's work, looking forward to the evening's party time with some of the guys and especially the girls. That evening, the girls arrived early at Yuar's tent, dressed, ready to have a good time and enjoy the party. Yuar had to adjust his thinking and speech. He didn't want to sound too odd. Hi, girls, he called out. Yuar had settled in Tom's body very comfortably. Hello, Tom. Cindy and me were wondering if you would like to have a drink and a chat inside first, before we went out. The night is young, and that has a way of separating people sometimes. And we don't want to miss this time together. We've been looking forward to it all day. What do you think, Tom? Cindy nodded agreeably and smiled. Sure thing, Dom. Come on in and close. I was going to say close the door, but you can't, eh? It's a tent. Well, no matter. We can still enjoy a short while together before we go out. Just make yourself comfortable, girls, while I get you both a cocktail. Cindy was the first one to kick off her high heels. Now that is comfortable, he said, giving a little giggle as she settled herself down on the sofa. Janice was quick to take off her shoes as well and quickly sat herself down on the sofa next to Cindy. They couldn't help but notice Tom and his muscular body
as he put on his shirt to go out. He was so strong and handsome. Cindy looked at Janice and gave a little wink and whispered, "Nice, huh, Janice?" "Oh," thought Cindy, smiling broadly, "this is great." "We all need a little R&R from time to time, don't we, girls?" Tom remarked. Couldn't help notice how the girls were eyeing him while he dressed. He felt good. Tom spoke with a big grin. "As my daddy always said, there's only one thing better than a pretty girl." "What's that?" asked Cindy with a look of expectancy. "Two pretty girls." Tom was still smiling broadly as he sat on the sofa and slipped an arm around Cindy's waist, giving her a big squeeze. Janice was feeling a little uneasy. She was hoping to be where Cindy was. Oh, he was so handsome. Lucky Cindy, she thought. Then Tom got up and said, "I can't forget you, Janice, my lovely babe," as he kissed her on the lips. Cindy saw her opportunity and sat next to Tom as he held her close and kissed her also. "Oh my, Tom, that looks awesome watching Janice holding your manhood in her mouth," Cindy gulped as she spoke. They all undressed and made passionate love together as the three of them orgasmed together and lay in each other's arms for a good 10 minutes, talking and playing. With that, the girls finished their cocktail, got dressed, and put their shoes back on. Tom finished dressing, and as they headed out the door, one of Tom's older friends who had just arrived asked if he could join them. "Sure, Bill, take Cindy's arm. What do you think, Cindy? Is that okay?" Cindy couldn't believe her eyes. Two of the most handsome men together. "Oh, yes, Tom, I'll go with Bill. That's fine with me." "Janice, you take my arm, honey," Tom said, as he extended his elbow toward her. Janice couldn't believe it. Tom was the one she wanted to be with tonight. "Sure, Tom, it's a pleasure," cried Janice excitedly as she slipped her arm through his. Tom gave her arm a little squeeze as she cuddled up closer. Bill grinned from ear to ear. Everyone was happy. Off they went, walking down the half-beaten road, chatting noisily. The place still looked like a war zone. The pizza was as gourmet as possible, truly delicious. They laughed and sang songs till 2 a.m. It's been a long time since they had this much fun, and being together was so enjoyable. Truly a night to remember. All were feeling a bit tired after such a lovely evening, and a well-earned sleep slowly crept into their minds. They bid one another a sleepy good night. Then Tom slipped Cindy and Janice $500 privately so as not to embarrass them. This was to go toward their building program. They both had large families and were good friends. "Wow. Good night, Tom," the girls said in pure unity. "When can we see you again? We miss you already." "Tomorrow at 7 o'clock in front of St. Michael's Church," Tom replied, as he walked away with an air of pleasure and an inward deep chuckle. The girls thought it a bit odd the way he acted, but they both loved his company and enjoyed every moment of the night they had just shared. They waved him goodbye and called back, "Okay, see you then, Tom." Ulah laughed within himself. Tom was to have his fatal accident the next morning when pulling down a precarious wall. His time was up and Ulah had to move on. And the girls would be present at the eulogy ceremony that afternoon in respect to Tom's life. Rabashak was on the spot that fateful morning, wishing he could take his place, as he always did in the past, when his king left the body he possessed. Rabashak always wanted to have a guard on standby, but Yuar insisted that if he couldn't teleport to the blank super body emporium in his city, then he had no right to rule the whole galaxy. Besides, he had become an expert at the timing. Never felt the pain, even though it always put Rabashak on edge. As the wall came crashing down, Yuar gave Rabashak a look of excitement. Then in a millisecond, Yuar's antimatter self was in the vacuum waiting chamber in the super body emporium in Yuar's crystal city. Still, he was the king, and there was none like him in so many ways, and what he wanted, he got. Clan, the captain in charge of the super body emporium, was alerted in the crystal golden city and was simply told that a VIP would be teleported there for a new super body blank and to have one prepared with no delay. It wasn't until Yuar possessed the body and it took his shape that Kalan knew it was the royal king, the great Yuar himself. This only enhanced his legend throughout the galaxy, as the common people could only imagine what great feat Yuar must have done to die and have to be teleported to another superbody. The common person might get a new superbody once in 100,000 cycles. Death was unheard of in the Federation of Planets. Meanwhile, back in the courts of the palace, Yuar was revitalized and grounded after the earthbound experience. He called his counselors together to discuss the invasion and conquest of Earth. The royal court was filled with an air of awesome respect for Yuar as the courtiers saw him in his brand new superbody.